Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to connect with us or send us a favorite recipe, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time, we are going to be talking about energy levels. Have you ever anybody tell you that you're high energy? I have people say that all the time. not late at night, I got to tell you. But during the day when I'm conducting something, they say, oh, you're so high energy. What does that mean? Let's define it first. What does high energy mean within our context? Within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, a workshop, a seminar, within the context of what we are doing to bring people together for a common goal so that they can have a successful outcome. So that we can all have a successful outcome, come to think of it, because every successful outcome impacts our reputation. And a lot of times we are indeed the paid third-party impartial, the paid mediator, we'll call it. So I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. And I think we're going to divide, as we often do, into different topics. And then we're going to talk about each one because, as a lot of you know, we are a very practical show. And we like theory. We like talking about theory. But we like knowing what to do about things even more. Right? Yeah. So what within our context, what types of high energy, well, really, what is high energy? What how is it defined so we know how to have it to go forward? A lot of people are calling it enthusiasm. Yes, enthusiasm, as people talk about confidence. And I'm going to call this efficiency. It's making the process go forward. Yeah, efficiency, very important. And as we often do on this show, a lot of people are talking about visualizing the outcome, visualizing the success. So let's take these one by one, and let's talk about them, and let's think about what they really mean and how we can get to the point where we're going to be able to have a high energy level. Yeah, a lot of us do as human beings, I think, because we are by nature extroverts, right? Yeah, that's why you like to lead. That's why you like to be the person who gets things done, right? And that goes with enthusiasm, doesn't it? And Grace and others are making a very good point that needs to be made first off with our high energy levels and our enthusiasm. Pardon me. And a lot of people are talking about it. Thank you all for being here. That even though you've seen it before, it's the participants' first time. Good point. Even though you've seen it before, it's the participants' first time. You have to kind of rev up your high energy level and your enthusiasm, maybe, because you've done this before, right? Primarily because you get to be a specialist in a certain area, and people know that you were successful last time, so they go to you for the next time, right? And it means that a lot of times, those of us who've done this for some years, see the same types of issues a lot. We do, because they recur in different forms, but within different groups and different contexts. And we've seen it before, but you have to always remember that your participants, it's new. And they have to be enthusiastic. So you have to be enthusiastic because it's fresh. This is a new one, right? And it never goes exactly the same way. We're dealing with human beings. Yeah, it never really is always exact, right? It's similar because similar issues, but different twists and turns. And you have to remember, this is their first one. Yeah, people using the word burnout, B-U-R-N-O-U-T, it may be kind of an Americanism, but it means that you've seen something so much that you're kind of bored and you're working on half energy level. Yeah, you just can't muster up the enthusiasm that you used to. And that happens to people. And when it does, you should really take 5 deep breaths and consider whether or not you like being in the middle of things anymore. And maybe you'd like to make a change. You know, people do. Around in the United States, there's an expression. I know this is a global show, and so it may not kind of translate well. But it's kind of a weird expression. It's called midlife crisis. It means that people get kind of, when they get towards their 50-ish, they want to change their lives just because they've been doing the same thing for a long time. Midlife crisis. Yeah. And if you've got that and you're kind of burned out and you really can't muster the high energy level and enthusiasm anymore, well, try something else for a little while and see if you can get back to it. Because it's not fair to your participants. It's not fair to them that you're not really acting like this is really exciting and interesting and we're going to reach a successful outcome and it's going to go well type enthusiasm. If you'll excuse me one second, I'm going to cough. This is a live show, and I can't delete it. So that proves it's a live show. Excuse me. Pardon me, I'm back. And my enthusiasm level is still here, even though I've been doing this show for what, about 8 years or something? I mean, for a long time. And there's lots of them. But it's so interesting because we all have different thoughts on the different ideas. Yeah. Yes. Excuse me. It's very windy out here today, and my allergies are acting up. People are asking if I'm sick. Thank you for asking. No, I don't think I'm sick. I think that it's just kind of windy and the wind kind of pushes the allergens towards you. It's kind of like, yay, good. So, enthusiasm. What else should we have? Ethan and others are saying we should be a good example of optimism. Yeah, optimism. If the leader doesn't think we're going to make it, how are the participants supposed to think that? Right? Yeah. And people know. They can feel it. They know, even if they've never seen an exact negotiation before, they've seen humankind before, and they can feel that you're not optimistic about the outcome. You think this is a waste of time, but you're being paid, so you don't care. No, 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 no. We're going to lead with enthusiasm and high energy and an optimistic attitude that we're going to find a way to reach our successful outcome. And I'm always quite optimistic when I handle anything. And if you truly think that it's not going to work, you should decline the employment. Really should. Because that's a preconceived notion of failure. Preconceived notions of failure tend to come true. Because everything is done with that gloom over it. Right? No, we need to be optimistic about success. Yeah, this is a good point, too. Suki and others are saying you need to be a good example of completing assignments willingly. A good example of completing assignments willingly. Yes, you know how sometimes people are in the group because it's required in some way? Oftentimes I see that when I do multinational corporations and people of a certain employment level and up are required to come to a seminar or workshop, for example. they are required to come to a think tank, which is sometimes it's called the focus group. It is people of a certain level of interest and expertise who are required by their employer to come and see if they can solve a problem. But they're not there because of their enthusiasm sometimes. So in order to maintain high energy level and enthusiasm for the group dynamic, because after all, being surly and kind of unwilling is catchy, right? We want to model it. We want to, and keep track. We're going to talk about that with efficiency, the keeping track of who's getting the assignments done, how well, how valuable, and who we're going to report to if what we're going to do about it. Yeah. So a good example of completing assignments willingly. Good point, Suki and others. People are talking about belief. Belief in the goal. I think that's kind of optimism, isn't it? Belief that we're going to make it, that it's going to be successful. Yeah, it's optimism and belief in the goal. Hussein and others are talking about a good example of the civility rules, which goes to high energy level and enthusiasm. Yes, that permeates all of this, really, doesn't it? And yes, for those of you who are new, and thank you all for being here, for the people who have been here for many years, thank you. The civility rules are really the only rules that Recipe for Peace now have. And they basically say we will not be rude to one another. Because if somebody's being rude to you, your energy level will flag. Or maybe it won't. It'll spike, but it'll be negative because you'll be mad, right? Yeah, and kind of fight back. No, we want positive high energy levels, don't we? And the civility rules basically say we will not be rude to each other. We will take turns. We will not lose our temper. We will not have negative body language, lean back with your arms crossed and roll your eyes and sigh, right? Yeah, the civility rules. We will be civil in our dealings with each other. And the willingness also, I don't know if this is a part of the civility rules or not, but I usually make it so, that we will, if given a task, do it to the best of our ability, right? Yeah, and not just ignore it, not just go, I'm not going to bother. No, we want to have it all set and all within our ability to do. The civility rules. What other kind do we have? What other topic is the next one? It's confidence. That was enthusiasm. And enthusiasm and confidence are kind of similar. Yes, Alex and others and Hussein and others are saying that the participants will have high energy and feel confident if the leader knows what he or she is doing. Participants will have high energy levels and feel confident if the leader knows what he or she is doing. Now you say, how do they know that you know what you're doing? You exude confidence and enthusiasm. And it is contagious, just like bad things are contagious. And it is confidence building within the group dynamic. We're going to make it, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go forward. Let's discuss these issues and come to a conclusion so that we can present an opinion as a group, for example. Right? Yeah. And then we as leaders, because we're usually the leader, pull the participants forward without letting them kind of scatter to the edges and not get the issues talked about. Yeah. Yeah. It, you have to... part of the process is keeping the conversation in line, so to speak. The civility rules, but also the this is our goal, we're headed towards it. How does this help us? Not so much. Let's get back on track, right? Yeah. People are equating confidence with experience. Steve says, is similar reasons due to reputation, similar issues due to your reputation. Mm-hmm. And that's true. You get a reputation in the community, so to speak, a reputation for being able to handle certain things, and you see them a lot. So that's your experience. It's interesting that a lot of people are talking about volunteering. We talk about how to gain experience sometimes, because some of you haven't been in business are not, well, you might not even be a paid third-party impartial. You just want to know how to handle your family, for example, really. And, you know, people come to the show for different reasons. But experience is something you need to get under your belt, need to gain. But sometimes you don't want to gain it in the real world. Does that make sense? You've been chosen as leader, and you're not exactly sure because it's kind of your first time. Everybody's got a first time. But you need to have confidence, and you need to have enthusiasm, right, and a high energy level. And the other two topics that we're going to be talking about this show, which is efficiency and being able to visualize the outcome. Everybody's got a first time, but you don't have to let everybody know that it's your first time. I've seen people do that. It's kind of like, why? Why is that? It's so lacking in confidence. Oh, this is my first time. I'm not sure what I'm doing. Help me. Ah, gee, you don't want a leader to say that. Really, you don't. So we understand how to deal with people, right, because we've been listening to this show quite a while. And don't qualify your leadership by telling people it might not be good leadership. What's the point in that? I see especially women do it. I don't know why that is, but they do. If you've seen that, yeah, we're getting a lot of agreement. And people saying that it's not so smart to do that. Yeah, no. You are perfectly capable and intelligent and trustworthy as a leader. Do not sell yourself short and make I can't at people. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. You want to be confident and assured, right? Yeah. We can handle this. We've got this under control. I'm a good leader. Even if it's your first time, it doesn't make you a bad leader. And one of the ways to gain the experience, which is what we're talking about with high energy level, with the confidence, people do it, well, it's under our topic of confidence for high energy level, but experience is part of it. And one of the ways to get the experience is to volunteer. Mm-hmm. Shadow someone with more experience if they'll let you. Volunteering is easier, I think, because there's more opportunity. So that you get the hang of it, so that you can see it, so that you can privately critique the leader that you're looking at and say, I'd like to do that, that's a great idea, or, wow, that's a really bad idea, I'm not doing that, whichever applies, right? Yeah. So you want to be in a group in order to know how to lead a group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes I do it, even today, in groups that I'm interested in. But also, I like to participate in something that I don't know anything about, or I like to see a leader who has a really good reputation. Yeah, I like to be mentored, so to speak, to take a look of what it is that they do that has led to this community opinion of them, right? Yeah, and it's a mighty fine thing. Mm-hmm. So, we want to think about volunteering and becoming a participant. Yeah. Yeah, not volunteering to lead because that's counterproductive. You want to learn something. Volunteer to be a participant, right? Yes. Uh-huh. And you'll hear a different side, too, because you'll be privy to what the participants think between themselves. Mm-hmm. And then you'll think about whether or not people think that about you, and nobody told you. Mm-hmm. Very interesting to do that. Mm-hmm. Jan and others are talking about when you have experience, sometimes you get a preconceived notion, right? I know how this is going to go. It always goes in this direction. Be aware of it. Be aware of it because it's a really bad idea. Be aware of the fact that you don't want to have preconceived notions like that, that you want to be able to think about the group, think about the issues, think about the dynamic of this group, not of the last group. You know, they say that America always fights the prior war because they look at the mistakes that they made at the prior war and then they correct them in the next war, but it's not the same kind of war. Does that make sense? Yeah. Same thing with this. You can certainly think about what happened before and think about the conclusions and think about what maybe could have been done better, even though we had a successful outcome, right? But this is a whole new group of people, a whole new group dynamic to handle. Yes. And so we are going to go forward without our acknowledging our preconceived notions. We've got them, right? That's what's known as experience. We do. We have preconceived notions. The idea is not to let them rule us, to understand that that's what we've got, that that's what's happening, and to work forward from it. Yes, to understand it and to say, you know, that's all right. We can go forward. Pardon me, took a sip of water. So what's our next topic for our high energy level talk? Mm-hmm. And I believe it was efficiency. That's what I called it. But people were talking about, and still are, talking about the process, the actual process of getting this done. And we at Recipe for Peace Now are very interested in that, as we know from prior shows, right? Archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But the process is how we get people as a practical matter to work themselves towards a successful outcome, towards a conclusion. Mm-hmm. It's really the process of the step-by-step. And how can we make that more high energy level? How can we keep the enthusiasm and confidence levels up in ourselves and in our participants? Mm-hmm. With the step-by-step. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cheryl and others are talking about giving people the okay, giving them the ability to ask for help if they need it. Ask for help. Ask questions. I always say ask as many questions as you'd like. And sometimes people are given a task, and even a team is given a task, and it seemed straightforward and clear, but in doing it, they weren't so sure, right? Yeah, they weren't so sure exactly what it is they were supposed to be doing with this task. What is it that we've got? And it is important for people to feel confident, but to allow them to be able to really do it, mm-hmm. to be able to go forward and say, this is my goal. This is what we're doing. This is, oops, I'm not sure. So that's the ask questions part, right? Ask me questions at any time. Don't just decide amongst you that this is what it must be. No. Bring your questions to the group, if that's what we need to do, so that people can think about it. Bring your questions to me as the leader. Don't just ignore something or make up what you think it is. Does that make sense? And I come out and I say this right up front. Come to me with any kind of questions. Don't hesitate. And I mean it quite sincerely. And people understand that that's okay. It gives them freedom to ask for help, for goodness sake. And you know what? If I as leader don't know, and if it's the right kind of a thing, we bring it to the group and nobody's quite sure. It's a good question, but whew, we're not sure. That's why I bring in an expert, right? Yeah. And an expert doesn't have to be someone you physically bring in. You could call them. You could connect with them on the internet. You could research it. You could look at the internet, right? We'll find the answer. But we won't find the answer and know that we need it, because we do. Because if that's the question, we need the answer for the successful outcome. Unless somebody, goodness gracious, asks it. And we go, oh, that's a good question. Let's think about that. Yes. Mm-hmm. What else should we do for efficiency to maintain high energy levels? Which are really confidence and enthusiasm, right? Yeah. I feel enthusiastic and optimistic about the outcome. Because it may be complicated, but I'm in a really good group. We're really getting somewhere. We're really thinking it through. We're really going to take action and not just kind of waste everybody's time. Ooh, my pet peeve, wasting people's time, right? No, we're not going to do such a thing, right? Yeah, to just waste time. Mm-mm-mm. So you're going to ask for help. We're going to be efficient. Addison and others are talking about being transparent. That goes to being able to ask for help, but it also means, it goes back to our idea from enthusiasm, that this is your 900th time doing this kind of a negotiation. It's their first. And the really stuff that you think is ridiculously obvious isn't. And it's better to state something ridiculously obvious than to have it be, oh, my God, I didn't realize that. Ever been in a situation like that? Somebody thinks something is really obvious, and it's not. You know, I have that a lot. I shouldn't admit this. But with computer stuff, because I'm getting better as the years go by, but I'm still not real intuitive. And people who've been doing it a while and have a feel for it, or they've just been doing it a while, they leave out the ridiculously obvious parts, but they're not ridiculously obvious to me. Right? Yeah. They leave out the keystroke or something and pushing enter and things they don't even think about it anymore, because that's just how it's done. You know that. And the answer is, no, I don't know that. Take me through it step by step and think about each step before you do it, right? Yeah. Think about what isn't obvious to a newbie, to people that are looking for it for the first time. And even if they're there for the ninth time and you know these people, sometimes they forget things are not obvious. Be transparent always. What it is that we're about to do. Why I'm going to make an executive decision in this direction, because I think that this is why I think it's right. Mm-hmm. Why I'm going to cut off this conversation, although it's terribly interesting, because it doesn't push us forward in a practical manner towards our stated goal, right? Yeah, sometimes I do that. Because I can see that we're getting all wound up on something really interesting. but completely irrelevant, in my opinion. Now, when I make that irrelevant statement, which I do it real nice, sometimes people argue with me that it is relevant. And you know something? Sometimes they're right. I just didn't think about it from that angle, right? Yeah. So always listen to other people's opinions, right? Yeah. And their enthusiasm and their high energy. Mm-hmm. So be transparent. This is a good point Rose and others are making, that you need to know when you need an expert. Know when you need an expert as part of the efficiency. We're batting this around. Mm-hmm. It's part of the process. We've asked for help. And we're not really getting anywhere because we really don't know what the answer is. And we could be talking about it until forever, and we wouldn't be getting to our successful outcome. So we need to call in an expert. You need to have a feel for when you need an expert. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little bit plumatic as an idea. If someone or a few people in the group, some subgroup, really feel that they are the expert, right? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what you've got is that they disagree, right? Yeah. They disagree with each other as to what the outcome, what we should do next. Mm-hmm. And it's your job to be the third party impartial who helps them get over that, who helps them to see what it is that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to have a tiebreaker, so to speak. People call it a tiebreaker, maybe. Mm-hmm. But that's when you how to know to need an expert. Mm-hmm. And that's a yes, no. People are asking who chooses the expert. Now, in my world, I make that a leadership decision. Sometimes there's groups that want to bring in different experts from different sides and kind of have a battle of the expert thing. Mm-mm-mm. What point is that? Won't get us any further. It's not to our efficiency, right? Yes. So we want to have someone impartial look at the facts and look at the issues and give an opinion as to what to do, mm-hmm. or maybe even help. That would be good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that we can reach our goal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about encouraging questions. Mm-hmm. Mohammed's making an interesting point. Thank you. Mohammed says that you should encourage questions, but only the constructive type, not as a delaying tactic. Ooh, good point. Because it is true, sometimes you encourage questions, but the constructive kind, not as a delaying tactic. Ever see anybody do that? In the United States, governments kind of do that sometimes. We call it a filibuster. They just keep frickin' talking so that they don't get to a conclusion, right? No, we are not going to have sabotage like that. We are not. Mm-mm-mm. We are going to go forward, and we are going to ask questions that have a reasonable basis for being. Right? Right. And not just being naggy. Mm-hmm. And not just as a delaying tactic, not as a filibuster. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else should we do? Mm-hmm. So that was efficiency. Not delaying tactics. And keep the process going forward. I often, if it's real complicated, and I've got a lot of different ones going, I think it's a good budgetary move to hire someone to keep track of the actual, the nuts and bolts, the communication, the passing along of information, the sending of attachments, the scheduling of meetings, and like that. I actually have an assistant full-time who does that for my various groups, but a lot of times people in the group needs one, depending on how complicated. And it is a very, very good investment if you've got someone efficient. Because you as leader are busy. You're popular. You're doing a lot of stuff all at once, a lot of different groups. After all, we don't do this just one group at a time, right? Yeah, we've got a lot of irons in the fire. But they all need to have efficiency and keep up their level of enthusiasm and their level of energy. And they will lose enthusiasm and confidence if the communication breaks down, right? Oh, you've had that with a group. This is hopeless. Nobody knows anything, and then we get there, and there's all kinds of stuff that you have to first read. No! Remember my rule. Don't pass out stuff to read. Give it first so that everybody can come prepared, and you're not looking at the tops of a bunch of heads as they're trying to skim it to find out what it says. That's a waste of your time, your group dynamic, right? We've all got it ahead of time. We all prepared, and now we're ready to discuss. Yes, efficiency, very important. Communication is very important. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about is visualizing the outcome. Oh, yeah, we're going to run low on time for the recipe again. We'll try to get to one of them because I know a lot of you guys like it. And I like it, too. It's just that we have such good conversations. We're going to visualize the outcome. What does that mean to our high energy level? Delma and others are saying you need to decide what a successful outcome looks like. Yes. How will we know what it is that we're trying to do if we haven't the vaguest notion of when we have it? Right? Yeah. You have to decide what success looks like. Now, sometimes it's obvious, but sometimes it needs to be flexible according to the circumstances as you go forward in the process, right? Yeah. As you progress, sometimes your successful outcome changes what it is that you want. Sometimes the outside world intervenes. Something happens. Maybe something good happens, like the disease gets cured. There's a new cure on the market. Yay, team. What if sometimes the outside world makes an impact that's not so good? We lose our funding, for example, right? Yeah. So you need to visualize the outcome and be flexible about it as things evolve. Because it is an evolving process, right? Yes. This is true. A lot. Padmaya and others are talking about the fact that that's not the leader's goal, to visualize the outcome. That's a group goal. That's something that we need to visualize as a group so that everybody has buy-in, so that everybody is going, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I can accept that. You need to visualize the goal as a group. Good point. Because if the leader just gives you a goal, unless it's a seminar or workshop where it's kind of a, you know, it's an example situation, you need to be able to say, let's get together, let's decide what it is we really want. And whether or not we have the resources to do that, and if not, we'll scale it back and we'll do it step by step. You know, sometimes the goal is a piece of the whole, right? And we're working on it. That goes towards our process. But we need to get to a certain stage in order maybe to get funding to show that we are doing it, that we're in process, that we've already thought it through, in order to get some sort of approval, right? Sometimes your goal is the first step, or the second or third or fourth, the next step towards the successful outcome. And you've had to divide it up because you need things at the various stages. Yeah, I see that a lot with multinational organizations. You have to prove as a group that you're really on it before anybody will take you seriously. But you can't reach your ultimate successful goal until you've been taken seriously and gotten some sort of permissions, funding, whatever it is that you need, right? So you've got interim steps, and the success of those interim steps are goals too. They're the immediate goal towards the future goal. Got it? Yeah. Yeah, it's a process. It's step by step. So you visualize each step, each goal, and also if you're doing it like that, you visualize what your ultimate outcome is, right? What you would ultimately like, what it should look like. So we've talked about it as leaders. Let's think for a minute about how we're going to get the group dynamic to have high energy levels, and which is enthusiasm and confidence and efficiency and visualization, and really, really be part of a group that's going forward because we're all feeling very connected, very like we're going to succeed, very optimistic, right? Which is what high energy level really is. It's really like, yes, let's do this. Let's do it now. Let's push it forward, right? Yeah. So we as leaders have that. And we might even kind of be enthusiastic types. I'm kind of an optimist by nature, right? And probably you are too. I'm kind of enthusiastic and optimistic and like that, just as a person, kind of an extrovert. But a lot of times the people in your group are not. That's why you're the leader and they're the participant. But you've got to lead them towards high energy and positivity or the group's going to fail. And it just will. It won't really have a successful dynamic. So how can we get these people to make a strong, high-energy, confident, optimistic, efficient, and visualized group dynamic? Yes. Thomas and others are saying by being a good example, all the positive traits. A good example. It's catchy. Enthusiasm is catchy. You have to be a good example of it. You know, this is a good point, too. We talk about this sometimes. Prior shows, of course, are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, that in order to get enthusiasm, in order for people to understand that they are going forward, even though it's taken a while, because sometimes it does, and people forget how low down you were when you started, right? Yeah, it's human nature to forget that it was really, you started really low and now you're pretty good. It's working out, yeah? And people forget that. They forget how far away they were when they started this journey. And it's important to remind them, yeah, to allow people to understand that we are going forward. Yeah, we are. We are going forward. We are being successful. We are. It's just the process takes a little while. And so we need to think about it as a series of successes, right? Yeah, a lot of you like a timeline, an actual visualization of how we're doing. I don't object to it as long as it doesn't take too much time away from the group, right? Right. But I do think that each time you have a step forward, we should celebrate each success. Then people remember, wow, we celebrated something good. We're getting there. Yeah. And everybody loves a good celebration, right? Yeah. Let's celebrate each success. Let's have a treat. Let's all go do something fun. Yeah, let's vote on what we want our celebration to be, right? Yeah, some groups would like to choose to think about it, right? Yes, and not do whatever the leader's idea of celebration is. Mine usually involves cake, let's face it. So, yeah, but you should celebrate every success, every step forward, so that we understand that we are doing that, we are stepping forward, and we're not just trudging and not getting anywhere. Because people do forget how bad off they were to begin with. Mm-hmm. Yes. How else should we infuse the group with high energy levels and enthusiasm and confidence and being able to visualize? Quite a few people are talking about the civility rule enforcement. Mm-hmm. The answer is to enforce fairly, right? Consistently, as in don't let something slide just because you're running out of time or something. Mm-hmm. Nope. We're always going to be civil. And the most important one, I think, especially for people that not have so much experience, immediately. Don't set a tone in your group, which is the dynamic, right, that allows people to be the least bit uncivil to each other. Right away. Yeah. Don't let it slide, and then when it gets really bad, because it will escalate, rudeness will escalate, then try to enforce the civility rules. Let's do it at the outset, so that, A, nobody feels put upon that they've been singled out, right? And, B, so that we don't get to the point where we have to really enforce them and complain and 43 other things. Let's announce them first. Let's be impartial. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do we infuse the group with high energy levels and enthusiasm? Mm-hmm. Joseph and others are talking about empathy, mm-hmm. having empathy for your fellow person, your fellow participant, and for the groups that they represent, maybe. Remember that we've discussed this, that empathy is not agreement. People think empathy is agreement. It is not. Empathy is not agreement. It is understanding, which is the first step towards reaching an agreement that you all can live with and go forward. Right? Empathy is understanding. Yes? I am speeding up because I'm going to try to get to a recipe. I know you guys like it. And how do we gain this empathy? Yes, thank you, all at once. We're going to break out the 5W questions so that we can really find out what people are thinking, what they are, why they have that opinion. Right? And that's to empathy. And the 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. You ask those questions to find out why this person has this opinion. Mm-hmm. Is it theirs, personally? Is from their personal experience? Or is it something that's kind of social? That's something that they learned as a group bias, maybe? That would be interesting to know now, wouldn't it? Yes. Is it because of your personal opinion? Or because somebody gave you that personal opinion? Is it, why is this your idea? Why is this your stand? Why is this what you are promoting? Mm-hmm. A lot of times the answer to that is, I don't know, really. Let's think this through, because it's the way it's always been done. Because it's a preconceived notion, right? Yay! Let's think that through. And, you know, it's not your job to really change cultural norms behind your participants, for example. But they could be perhaps persuaded for this particular instance, with these particular issues, we're going to do it this way. Right? Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the idea of the thing. The idea that we are going to be able to pull out reasoning, pull out why it is that this is so important, pull out we are going to have a successful outcome. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The 5W questions. Let's get down to the bottom of this so that we can all have enthusiasm and a high energy level as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And sometimes you want to ask the 5W questions, or some of them at least, privately, not in front of the whole group. Right? Yeah. And is why we have some timeouts with the food. Yeah. The food is really a tool. Now, it could be dinner time also. I mean, you could be hungry. But it's really a tool to get people to gather together in a way that they're not going to be mad at each other. It gives us a chance to cool down. It gives us a chance to call a time out that is natural. When we see that things are getting to be a little bit kind of potentially uncivil, right? Because we never reach incivility. And we're going to have the ability for the leader to maybe have a quiet discussion with someone.
Mm-hmm.
To have the people get together, the group get together to do something nice and fun. We all like to eat. And to talk about something that's not going to anger anyone. Wow, that's really delicious. How did you make it? What's it called? Right? Right. Now, if we're going to have food, and you are, it's also a great way not to lose people on the break. You know how people kind of wander off, they make a phone call, they have a cigarette, they wander back kind of late to the group, and it kind of breaks the dynamic, right? This way they all stay in the room because they want to. If you're going to have food, and you are, you're going to want to take a survey concerning allergies, food prohibitions, or religious prohibitions, types of food. You don't want anybody to have a bad time or be unable to participate. You're going to convey this information to everyone so that they don't violate it. You're also going to ask your participants to bring a little placard, a list, of what, not just what the name of it is, meatloaf, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down the list and see if it's okay for me to eat. Right? Right. I also think that we should have at least one safe dish. A safe dish is one that we've taken the survey, everybody can eat. I live in the United States. My people may have different ordinary ingredients than you. A curry, for example, would be very unusual and an adventure recipe. But my safe recipe ingredients will have ingredients that it is more than likely my participants have eaten before and know they can, right? Yes. And it is not too many ingredients. Mm-hmm. So this time we're going to be doing a safe recipe. Yes, I have left 5 minutes. We will actually, let's do the adventure recipe because it's been hanging around longer. Yeah. And people are going, when are we going to get to that? It's the pork loin, the herb lemon pork loin. Delicious. But it's pork. And a lot of religions and a lot of people don't eat pork. Yeah. And so this is our adventure recipe. Now, you've taken your survey, and your people, in your opinion, because that's what they've told you, can eat this, or else you wouldn't bring it because you don't want to exclude anybody. So here we go. Pork loin, you know it's the round part that doesn't have any bones. You could do this also with a pork roast. I actually like a pork roast better because it's more meat, and I have a slow cooker, which is God's gift to humanity, I got to tell you. And it will make a boneless pork roast. I think they call it boneless sirloin pork roast. I'm not sure about the sirloin word. But one of those big lumps of pork with the fat on the top, you could do it with that too. I would cook it, however, in a slow cooker for a whole bunch of hours. You know, you throw stuff in the morning, you turn it on, food comes out at night because it's a tougher piece of meat. Pork loin's a soft piece of meat. Mm-hmm. And you also have to chill a pork loin so it's all together with the marinade. You could do this with the – I oftentimes do it with a roast, in all truth and honesty. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to have – oh, I don't know. Let's have about 6 pounds of meat, of pork. You're either doing a big roast – that's a nice size one. I like at least a 5-pound roast because then it's got some heft to it, and you can have spares. I don't like to run out of food. If you're going to do this with the pork loin, which is the roundish part, you're going to need 2 of them, and you're going to tie them together. Yeah. So you're going to put stuff in the middle and then tie it together. It's kind of weird but true. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a couple tablespoons of rosemary. You're going to use dry. I like the snips. I like the fresh kind where you snip it. 6 garlic cloves that we're going to mince. If you think I use too much garlic, which people say I do, but use less. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a whole bunch of finely shredded lemon peel. You know how you use a microplane for it to really fine, to make it fine? Let's have, a couple of tablespoons of it. And we've got our pork roast. And in addition to being this pork, it's our venture recipe, right? We're going to have about 1/2 pound of thinly sliced pancetta or some sort of thin ham like that, right? You could use, don't use bacon, some sort of thin ham. Bacon's a little too greasy for it, in my opinion, although if you like it, you could use it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to combine the rosemary, the garlic, and the lemon peel and the salt. And we're going to take our 2 pork loins, and we're going to spread the rosemary over the top of one of them. And then we're going to take our pancetta or our ham, really, on the top of the other one. And we're going to take the one with the ham, right? We're going to plop it on top of the one with the herb mixture, and we're going to tie them together. So that they have mixture and ham in the middle. It's like stuffing them, except it's not stuffing them because you're not slicing them open. You're combining them, right? And we're going to tie them together. Actually, yes, people are saying that you should say to put the string underneath first. Absolutely true. You want to put the string underneath the one you're going to put the herbs on so that you can just, when you put the ham part on, plop, you can just move the string up and tie it real fast and real good, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Now, this needs to kind of marinate and get the flavors together. So we're going to wrap it in plastic wrap to keep it from drying out. And we're going to stick it in the refrigerator and chill it overnight. Otherwise, it's going to be, the middle is going to be wasted. Mm-hmm. We're not going to preheat our oven so it's prepared, right? Right. We're going to preheat our oven to 325, 350. We're going to take our nice meat bundle. We're, of course, going to take the plastic wrap off. Right, right. We're going to stick it in a nice roasting pot. 2-2.5 hours. You're going to use a meat thermometer to 150, right? Mm-hmm. It's done. It's really easy to do. And it's fabulous. Mm-hmm. Let it stand for a few minutes when you take it out of the oven. Just because you've got all that nice stuff in the middle that you don't want to run out. Mm-hmm. Slice it up. There you have it. In all truth and honesty, it is so popular and, if I may say, so yummy. Because it all kind of melds together. So you do have stuffed pork loin. It's just not sliced. It's 2 pork loins stuffed together. Of course, you untie it, right? Yeah, when you slice it, you untie it. And I usually make several 2-packs, several of these, and put them in the pan, depending how many people I've got. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's delicious. It's easy to do. It makes fabulous leftovers, so it does. And there you have it, some herb and lemon, and pancetta. Ooh, yum, yum, yum. Pork loin.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to do. Easy to transport. Yes, you could refrigerate the leftovers and serve them cold, sliced thin. Yum. I'm always hesitant about leftovers to tell anybody about leftovers because you know you have to store them properly. You don't want to make anybody sick. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. We, my friends, are out of time, but we did get to our adventure recipe. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to connect with us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.